Let me see, sir listener. Where were we last week?
The woman was getting married.
Oh, that's right, that's right. She was about to utter her famous words, I do.
And Andy Mouse was caught under her wedding dress.
That's how chewed through the tangle of threads of lace, too, that ensnared his right leg, dangling him upside down. While the minister was intoning beneath the vaulted chamber, asking the bride if she took Reginald to be her lawful wedded husband, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, from this day forward and so long as you both shall live. The minister then paused, awaiting her reply, but waited in vain. For at this moment, the results of Andy's beaver-like action now set in motion the following chain-like reaction. The severing of one of the two main threads under tension, the ones responsible for Andy's suspension, caused him to swing in an arc, like a pendulum, inward towards the human leg. But the arc stopped him short of touching. Well, not quite, in fact, for Andy's little tail got into the act, lightly brushing against her thigh at the top of his swing, causing an involuntary squeal to escape from the bride, and produce an involuntary hitch in her side, which twitch shook Andy loose, and he plummeted, landing splat, splayed flat on the naked arch of the fleshy foot of the pigeon-toed bride wearing blue satin shoes. The effect, in effect, was like lighting a fuse. The minister still beckoned the bride when out of her mouth and out of her eyes she emitted a sonic scream that tsunamied to the rafters and very likely continued on well into the hereafter. Not exactly the response the minister was after. Abandoning all ceremony, Matilda spun on her toes and, intent upon charging like a white rhino up the aisle, would have, except first she had to clear the child, the little flower girl standing directly behind. Treating the girl as if she were a hurdle, the bride tried leaping and almost succeeded in clearing the girl's head. Almost, that is, except for one knee. Those at the back, straining to see, couldn't, but yet they heard the awful thwack, which sounded at the back like someone loudly cracking their knuckle. The little girl buckled. The sound of the...
It won't crack.
They say it's not good for your knuckles, anyway. At the sound of the thwack, the little girl buckled and collapsed to the mat. This one hard contact, knee to mouth, mowing her down as effectively as Sherman mowed the South. Meanwhile, the patrons on both sides of the aisle, startled and confused, threw hasty handfuls of rice at the main attraction streaking by. You remember Pecos Bill's bride? Slewfoot Sue? The one the widowmaker bucked to the moon? Have you read that story, Andy?
Which one?
Pecos Bill.
Pecos Bill? Who's Pecos Bill?
Oh, well, Pecos Bill is a legendary cowboy, sort of like Paul Bunyan is a legendary woodsman. And Pecos Bill had a horse named Widowmaker, who was jealous of the girl Bill was about to marry. So Widowmaker gives Slewfoot Sue a ride and bucks her off so high she lands on her bustle, which bounces her even higher and higher and higher until she hits her head on the moon. Well, those kinds of stories are called tall tales. Yeah.
Hmm? Mouse tales?
Yeah. Well, anyway, this time it wasn't a jealous Mustang that was causing all the fuss, but a simple white mouse that convinced the near misses to abandon her spouse and fly up the aisle and fling the doors open wide, last to be seen disappearing over the sand dune countryside, the rolling dunes of Cape Cod. Meanwhile, back inside the church, the congregation, the frozen chosen, struck dumb by all the commotion, eyebrows raised like window shades, Here's the thing, and you may not believe me even after I tell you, but it was this. Not a soul saw the little white mouse, blinking up and squinting upwards like a mole under the now bright lighting. Amazing. It was right there, exposed. So can you believe me when I say that not a person's eyes were turned his way? Every look was fastened intently on the flower girl. The sweet little slip, who now had a bright red flow coming down her chin from lower lip and dripping on her pink satin gown. Every concerned eye all around was totally riveted on the child. Thus, when Andy's checkerboard vision cleared, he simply got to his feet and beat what's known in the trades as a hasty retreat. Oh. So, now, that's a good apple today. Andy, returning to the lair and finding Grandfather all alone, Uncle Bobo having off somewhere, took advantage of his absence to quickly recount for Grandfather the whole sordid affair. From the cousins pilfering supplies to them getting drunk, then the human showing up, and his narrow escape at the altar. When he was done pouring it all out, Andy was exhausted. Lay his head on his grandfather's chest and was quiet for a while he rested. Sometime later, Uncle Bobo was first to return to the lair, looking as if he had been sleeping it off somewhere. Then Zeke and Deke straggled in too, having escaped from the shoebox in which they had taken refuge in the changing room. In the process of leaping out of the box, they had scared a bridesmaid witless, who had come to pick up for the runaway bride. The cousins returning knew they had barely escaped with their lives, but they didn't let on that anything had happened. Then, surprisingly, Eeky straggled in too, whom Andy and the cousins all assumed to have died. Eeky told them in whispers that when he awoke, he found himself inside a garbage pail, where he had had to wait with patience and be ready to fly when the first human foot pedaled the lid, which, unfortunately for her, an unsuspecting church lady did when she went to empty a sink trap. Whip went the lid, tap, tap went the trap, zoom went the mouse, went the biddy. Wait. Before we can go on here, I must backtrack and tell you what happened. We must go back to that moment before when I described the bride fleeing down the aisle, having mown down the flower girl, who was proceeding to bleed profusely from her mouth. I said that not another soul had noticed the white mouse on the altar step because every eye was riveted upon the injured little girl. Whoa, this is not quite true. Because, of course, there was one other set of eyes not focused on the lass, and those were the eyes and blinking lashes of the flower girl herself. Propped back on her arms, sitting on her shins and surprised at being bowled over like a bowling pin would be if it had any feelings. Equally stunned was Andy the Mouse, who, after dangling upside down in the cloud, now lay on the altar step. Both mouse and girl shook their heads to clear their vision, and when and as soon as they did, they both locked eyes. Mutual surprise. The quick-thinking flower girl, quickly surmising that this was the factor explaining the bride's sudden departure, she, being a thoughtful child, not to mention a beautiful and sprightly like elf, had enough quiet sense to keep this fact to herself, and not point her finger accusingly at the remarkable sight she was seeing. But the moment only lasted a moment, as from every side the adults rushed in to anoint her with their concern. But it wasn't too long after that that Andy and Anna's eyes were to lock again. Anna Louise Davenport, for that is the flower girl's name. And it wasn't too long after that that things didn't stay the same, but manage to change, and in a major way. It was one day after the wedding fiasco. The mice were assembled in the lair. No one was talking. Grandfather Mouse had seen no point in reporting the cousin's wild behavior to Uncle Bobo. It would only lead to violence, but no change in their behavior, he was sure. As for what they had done, the cousins also were keeping mum, only claiming to be tired and going back for more nap, but not before threatening Andy what would happen if he opened his yap and spilled the beans, informing the elders about their bad misdeeds. They were non-specific about what the it would be, only guaranteeing
it would be bad.
Of course, Andy readily promised never to reveal, since to his grandfather he already had. Resting up as well from the ordeal, Andy took some downtime to reflect. What baffled him most on the subject of humans was on the matter of how they fed themselves. Andy couldn't understand it. What kind of restaurant was this that opened its doors once a week and only offered to people seeking a tiny morsel of bread and a small sip of wine from a cup the size of a thimble? How could their portions be that small, especially considering the size of the bulk they had to feed? On Sunday mornings, Andy would hover near the Mouse House door and watch them come to fill the pews. Then the regular things they'd do, things like sing and stand and recite a psalm and shake hands. Then, one by one, when it came their turn, each would rise and solemnly come forward to kneel at the rail, like they were kneeling before a judge at court, awkwardly balancing on their kneecaps alone, with no visible tail for support. Then hold up their hands and lift up their faces in supplicating fashion, and after doing all this so sweetly, receive hardly anything for it at all? Huh? One bite? One sip, never two? That was it? Of bread, a miserly crumb. Of red wine? Barely enough to moisten the tongue. So little, if it were to dribble on the tablecloth, it would hardly show a red dew stain at all. Then, biggest surprise? Here's what really got to Andy. When they were done with their crumbs, each got up and one by one returned to their places. Many had actual smiles on their faces. Ah! Andy couldn't fathom how any living creature who took up so much room could be given so little to consume and still be happy about it. Seeing their restraint, Andy felt himself a glutton, and even though he knew his cousins were at least 23 times more gluttonous than he, still he felt ashamed of himself. He compared himself to the humility of humans, and he vowed some day he would be that way. At least he'd strive to. A week went by, which to a mouse feels more like a month. Next Sunday's weather was brighter and better. Inside the church, sunbeams slanted through the stained glass windows, painting red and blue puddles on the floor. Andy stood his watch at the Mouse House door, watching the humans filter in, his vantage point affording him an unobstructed view of those slotting in along the front row pew, which included the little flower girl. Wearing a new dress, her hair in twin pigtails, and sporting a white gauze bandage affixed to her lower lip, she sat on the bench in a puddle of glow that illuminated her from tip to toe. The effect of this on Andy was pronounced. He felt mesmerized. He felt as if he were in a dream. He felt hypnotized, and it stayed this way until suddenly it broke in upon him that the little girl was looking back at him. Andy reacted, but not as he would have predicted. Responding to a primal urge to find out, Andy, instead of backing up, crept forward half a step into the brighter light, and, imitating the same gesture he had seen, got down upon his knees and held his forepaws up with the same beseeching look.
If you please.
It was only for a half second, but the message took. The little girl's eyes grew wide as saucers, prompting Andy to drop to all fours and timidly retreat within the hole. There was no denying the eyeing had taken place. Poking his nose out again, he checked. Yes, her attention was still riveted on the spot he had been. Still losing confidence, he retreated once more, all the way back to the depth of the lair. However, later that same afternoon, after Andy got up from a nap and was stretching his legs and taking a swift sniff round the grounds of the mews, approaching the hole once more, he was suddenly startled to see the business end of a cafeteria knife, held flat like a spatula, sliding through the opening, balancing a half-a-toasted donut on its blade. This was followed in a moment or two by the chattering sound of a ceramic saucer being slid inside. A saucer, minus its cup, just the right height for a mouse to lap up. It was ladled with 2 spoonfuls of grape juice. Andy the White Mouse marveled at the bounty before...
Can I try? What? Drinking from a saucer.
You want to try drinking from a saucer? But you want to see what it's like for a mouse, huh? Well...
Can I try it?
Sure. Why not try it?
I'll go get a saucer.
No. You don't get up here. We'll use my saucer. Yeah, I'll pour. Let's see. Take the tea here. And there we go. A little bit in the saucer. There you go. Now. Okay. Lap away. All right. He was at first unsure which to sample first, but he selected the donut. It wouldn't have mattered which he'd picked, because he had only taken 3 nibbles and a sip before he suddenly found himself rudely shoved aside by the muzzles of the 3 obnoxious cousins, bulldozing in, commandeering the donut chunk, which they then began pushing down the passageway to a cul-de-sac near another open vent, where they proceeded to gorge to their heart's content, stopping only to make sallies to the saucer whenever their thirst needed slaking, returning to their spoil and passing by Andy with their purple teeth showing in a snarl. You better not even think of partaking. Andy's only option was to try to claim a medium-sized bit of crumb that had broken off in transit. He wished to save it for his grandfather, but since it was too large to carry in his paws, he rolled it to a wall and nudged it up the wall until he could carefully balance it on top of his head. Andy set off running for the inner lair, but he didn't get far in getting there because he was met on the way by Uncle Bobo, following the lovely trail of aroma filtering down the passageway. They rammed like 2 bumper cars, and the impact impressed B. Mess directly under Bobo's chin. Uncle Bobo, the cruel Pantagruel with his extra poundage, pinning Andy to the floor, pretended to be having trouble getting off him. But when Andy got up, he was so angry for being held down, his bounty plundered, he didn't care if he was outnumbered or that they were bigger than him. He leapt up, ready to launch his attack, but something made him pause and suddenly hold back. Something was raising the hackles of his hack. It was something strange and unfamiliar. Not a sound this time, like the bridesmaids had made. This time around, it wasn't a sound at all, but a smell that was setting off Andy's warning bell.
Hey, guys?
He tried to get his uncle and cousin's attention.
Stop eating a minute.
But they wouldn't listen. They continued to gorge, but what was that scent? A sour top note floating above a bass note of dough? Andy sniffed and caught another whiff. Animal dander. Yes, that was it. That was the answer. Hey, you guys! But they still refused to pay any heed. Their nostrils were clogged with donut cake, and this would prove a fatal mistake. for suddenly, in a blur of fury and fur, a long black arm swept through the room like the boom of a sailboat, sweeping the deck, raking as it went. Flash of claws distended, one claw snagged Deaky by the nape of the neck, or let us say his collar stay, and before Andy could holler, "Run away!" too late, Deaky was yanked off his feet, the way a locomotive snatches the mail pouch off its tree, or to put it more modernly, as fast as a competing spouse snatches the TV remote off the couch. Deaky simply vanished and never even said ouch.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Perfect timing. Yep, here it comes. You better hurry, Andy. Don't forget your backpack.
My backpack. I always backpack.
Yep.
Grandpa, yep. Are you okay?
Yeah. Well, I'm fine.
You all right?
I'm fine. Yeah. What a boy. What a boy.